If you want to turn to John chapter 8, we're going to be looking there tonight. I assume that, well, at least those of us that are old enough to know what a dilemma is. In John chapter 8 here, we have a dilemma. I also had a little bit of a dilemma trying to decide exactly how to present this. So before we get started, I just want to touch on one thing. You know, we've talked a lot about the various different manuscripts, you know, and how there were variations in them. Some of you, especially, I've never seen a King James that had a note on this, but the New King James certainly does, and some of the other translations will sometimes have a footnote about this section from John chapter 7 and verse number 53 all the way down through John chapter 8 and verse 11. Some of the translations will have a note there that will say something to the effect of, well, for example, what this one says is, John 7:53 to 8:11 is absent from most of the older manuscripts, and those that have it sometimes place it somewhere else. The story may be authentic. Indeed, Christ's response of compassion and mercy is so much in keeping with his character that we accept it as authentic and feel that to omit it would be most unfortunate. That's what the Amplified translation has to say about it. Well, the fact of the matter is there was some debate about it. Now, there are some passages that actually, you know, were added to certain things along the way and got added in. And some of those have been removed as the evidence that they were added in later came about. As far as I know, none of the standard translations have removed this passage. They all have it. Even what people often think of the more liberal translations still include this one. Even the newer, more modern, most recent translations still include this section. Some, in fact, going back to the time of Augustine, who lived in the late 200s and early 300s time frame, his explanation was that it was originally there, but that some people didn't like the fact that Jesus didn't condemn the woman for her adultery, and so they started not reading it and removing it, and it wound up getting removed, and that it originally was part. But be that as it may, this section, there is some confusion about, was it supposed to be right here? Because there are some of the manuscripts that have it in other spots. Some have it down toward the end of John, and some have it in the Gospel of Luke instead of John. And it's a unique section. But as long as it's in there, I feel like we'll take the road that Jesus took. You know, Jesus had to deal with a translation as well, as we all do. Jesus did not have the original Hebrew manuscripts that Moses wrote of the Law of Moses. He didn't have them. He had copies of copies of copies that had been translated from Hebrew into Greek in what's called the Septuagint. And that's the translation he used. Now, we know from some of the old manuscripts that have been discovered of the Hebrew that that translation, the Septuagint, had some problems. They made some mistakes when they translated that from Hebrew. We even know that. And Jesus certainly would have known that there were problems with that translation. But you know what he did? He preached from it. He quoted from it. And it was the translation he had, and it was the translation he used. So we're going to have the translation we got, and we're going to use it. And we're going to assume then that since it's in here, that it is, until, you know, until enough evidence, if they find, you know, the original writing of John and it's not in there, then we'll say, well, we'll take it out of there. But until then, we'll just go along with the scholars who have left it in there and said, hey, we think it still belongs there. Because there are some phrases, words, even whole verses and things that they have actually removed from some of the translations because they said, hey, that wasn't originally in there. That was added later, which is a good thing. We want to have the original. All right, we've gone on too long about that already. So, basically what it starts with is there in chapter 7 and verse 53 when it talks about every man goes to his own house. from there, it talks about the fact then in chapter 8 and verse 1 that Jesus went to the Mount of Olives. So what we notice here is that as everybody else, apparently especially the Pharisees and the leaders of the Jews, would have lived right there in Jerusalem. They had their own houses. He wasn't from Jerusalem. He didn't have a place to stay in Jerusalem. So he had to go out to the Mount of Olives, which was a common practice of his. And we see him doing that on other occasions, especially in some of the other Gospels. This is actually the only time in John that the Mount of Olives is mentioned by name. And so he spends the night out there. What he was he praying, or did he actually sleep and rest? Don't know. Was he sleeping out in the open ground? Did he have a tent out there? Was there somebody's house that was a friend of his that lived out there? We don't know. But he went out, had to leave town. The Mount of Olives was about a mile or two walking distance. I mean, as the crow flies, it wasn't necessarily that far. But it would have been a mile or two of a walk out of town for him to get to. So it wasn't far away, but still, it was a good little trek. Now, the next morning then, we see him coming back and teaching some more. And of course, this is his practice. He teaches. He's telling the people God's words. And so, again, what we see here is everything that's consistent with Jesus and his behaviors and his patterns of life. Now, all the people came to him. He sat down to teach them, which was, I'd be all for reinstituting that one. The one that's doing the teaching sits down and everybody else stand up. Y'all be okay with that? Y'all think I preach too long when I'm standing up. Imagine how long I could preach if I was sitting down. But he has this idea as well, and so he sits down. That was the way back then. It was one of the things, it wasn't just a passing, hey, I'm telling you something, but it was, I'm going to sit here and I'm going to teach, and if you want to learn, you come. And that's what he did on the Sermon on the Mount as well. He went up on the side of the mountain and he sat down to teach, and that was the common practice. And the people were enjoying the teaching. The common people generally tended to seem to enjoy Jesus' teaching. The scribes and Pharisees, the Sadducees, the religious leaders, the ones who you would think would be of a spiritual mind and would want to discuss religious things and listen to teachings about religious things, they didn't want to hear him. They didn't want to listen. And as is the case here in this situation, the scribes and Pharisees interrupt his teaching session and they bring a woman in who had been taken in adultery and put her in there and try to give Jesus then a dilemma of his own. Dilemma is an interesting... You know, sometimes we say things like, well, it's all Greek to me. And then we say, well, I don't understand a thing about Greek. But we really do. I was thinking about that this morning in the Revelation class when Dwayne was reading about the angel that spoke with a loud voice. Do you know that the phrase loud voice there in the Greek is actually where we get, and it's very similar, spelling is a little different, but it's very similar to where we get our word megaphone. We all know what a megaphone is. We just didn't know it was Greek. But a megaphone, a big sound. And that's what he spoke with, a big sound, a big voice. Well, here as well, the word dilemma that we talked about a while ago and that we bring up here with Jesus in this situation with these Pharisees bringing this woman before him. The word dilemma is a Greek word. It came from the Greek on into English. And meaning to, and lemma is kind of a weird word that we don't have in English other than in dilemma. But dilemma, the lemma part basically means opposing ideas, basically, or two different subjects. So it's dilemma, two subjects, or two assumptions. And the idea is, we're going to give you this choice, and both choices are bad. And so you're stuck. You've got to either pick this one, or you've got to pick this one. They do this to Jesus all the time in the Scriptures. This is certainly not a unique type situation. Constantly they're coming to him. Well, do you believe this or do you believe this? Or this is the situation, what are you going to say about it? Because if you say this, then we got you. And if we say this, you know, they asked him about, what about paying taxes to Caesar? Well, if you say pay them, then, you know, everybody's going to be mad. If you say don't pay them, then, oh, you're in trouble with the Romans. They're always getting him in this, you got to go here or here, and well, you're going to get in trouble either way you go. And that's what they're doing with him here. Whichever way Jesus goes, they got him stuck. And what they always failed to realize was Jesus never accepted their dilemma. He always took a third road out of there. He found a third option that they didn't see. They thought it either had to be A or B, and he said, well, what about C? Why do we have to pick A or B? And so he does that to them here as well. We'll see as we get on further down. But they say to him, as they come in, Master, this woman was taken in adultery in the very act. And then they say, now Moses in the law commanded us that such a one should be stoned. What do you say about it? Now see, here's the dilemma. They brought this woman, and what an embarrassing situation. Jesus is teaching in the temple, in a very public place. Lots of people. One of the things we don't often realize, the temple at the time of Jesus, not just the temple, but the temple courts, there was several different courts there, and perhaps sometime along through here as we're looking at this through John, we'll get a map of the temple and see how it was laid out. But there were lots of different areas there, but a lot of it was wide open areas with just big walls around the outside. But big courtyards, big areas where a lot of people gathered. In fact, it was said that all of the courts that were involved with the temple, now of course the actual temple itself, only the priests could go in there, but the areas where the rest of the people came to be taught and to bring their sacrifices, to bring their offerings and things, that area was so large. Remember, we saw some of those pictures of the Colosseum. The temple area in Jerusalem was as large as two of those. And it was so large that it easily could have probably held 200,000 people. And needed to at times where there was a big feast like this. This was at the end of this feast that they were having, the Feast of Tabernacles. And so, as we think about that, we think about what a huge place and how many hundreds or even thousands of people would have been around, plus how and however many people were there listening to Jesus teach. And then this woman, do we feel? I know she should be ashamed of her situation, but. But do we feel no compassion for this woman who is dragged out into public? I doubt they gave her time to get dressed. They caught her in the act. No telling how unclothed she might have been, but how embarrassing for her. How embarrassing for Jesus and the crowd to have this woman dragged in here. And so can you imagine, here we are, we're sitting here worshiping, studying God's Word. If somebody were to drag someone in here, and that's the kind of situation that's occurred here. How embarrassing. What a difficult situation to deal with. And so they say then, okay, here's their dilemma. She was caught committing adultery. The law of Moses condemns adultery. Now they say the law of Moses says that someone who's committed adultery should be stoned. And they're stretching things a little bit. Now, it was true that someone who committed adultery under the Old Testament law was to be condemned to death by the judge if found guilty of that. Now, obviously, Jesus isn't the judge. He's not a judge in Israel as such. Now, we know he's the Son of God and he has the right to make these kinds of decisions, but that wasn't his position. They weren't bringing her to the right place, first of all. Secondly, the law of Moses was clear that you brought the man and the woman that were caught. Now, if they caught her in the act, there was a man there with her. Where's he? They didn't bring him, just her. Kind of a little bit of sexism going on there, isn't there? A double standard. They let the man go away. Some have speculated, and it's just that, it's speculation. Some have speculated, hey, the guy may have been one of these Pharisees that was dragging her in there. They certainly knew of her habits before. They caught her in the act. How do you go about catching somebody in that? You must have been following them around, waiting, trying to catch them to do that. And so they bring her in here. And they say, well, Moses said, kill her. Now here was the dilemma, though. That was one side of it. Was here's what Moses said. Now are you going to go against Moses? Moses, you know, we got to obey the law of Moses because we're good Jews. So are you going to go against him? The other side was, and the other side of the problem was, the Jews did not have the authority. They were under the Roman rule. They didn't have the authority to put anyone to death. Now we know from the case of Stephen, and some cases where they tried to stone Paul to death, and some cases with Jesus' life where they tried to push him off a hill, and they picked up stones to try to stone him a couple of times. They didn't care a whole lot about that when their emotions got really running high. But they knew that if he said, don't stone her, then, wow, you're breaking the law of Moses. You're a false teacher. If he said, do stone her, then they could go straight to the Romans and say, look, this fellow over here is teaching the Jewish people to break the law that Rome has set down. So see, you see, they got him, right? It's either A or B. But of course, Jesus finds C. He's going to find that third way out that they never thought about. Now verse number 6 says, this they said, tempting him, so that they might be able to accuse him. And constantly, this is exactly the kind of thing that they do on every circumstance. They're not sincerely wanting to know the answer to the question. Is God upset if we ask Him questions? If we go to His Word to find out the answer to honest questions, is He upset by that? Well, absolutely not. Was Jesus upset when people came and asked Him honest questions because they were seeking to know the truth? Well, no, He didn't get upset at people when they did that. But not these guys. See, they weren't interested in the truth. They weren't really interested in what He had to say about it. And they really weren't interested in keeping the law of Moses because they're already twisting the law to try to change the detail. And they're ignoring the part of the law they don't like. And they're ignoring the fact that this isn't the way to deal with this situation anyway. She's supposed to be taken to the judge. She shouldn't be taken to some rabbi, some teacher. That's not the job. But that's what they're doing here. That's not His job. But they're trying to tempt Him. They're trying to accuse Him. They're trying to find a way that they can have an excuse to put Him to death. Now, of course, if they really could have made the whole thing when He healed the man on the Sabbath day, and then, oh, you broke the Sabbath day. If they really believed that, and if they could have really gotten enough people behind that, they would have taken Him out and stoned Him right then and there. Breaking the Sabbath day was one thing that was very clearly taught in the law of Moses that a person was to be stoned for. You go back in the book of Exodus, right after the law was given, about Exodus 23, you have this fellow goes out on the Sabbath day and picks up sticks. That's it. Just picked up some sticks. Picked up sticks to make a fire with. But he went out and picked up the sticks. They grab him. They said, what are we going to do with this guy? Moses goes to the Lord and said, what do we do with this guy? He's out there picking up sticks on the Sabbath day. God said, stone him to death. Let the whole congregation throw a rock at him till he's dead. Now, if they really believed Jesus was breaking the law by breaking the Sabbath day, that's what they would have done with Him. But they weren't really interested in that. They didn't really believe that, and they knew they couldn't make it stick. They knew the people didn't believe that He had broken the Sabbath day. Jesus' response is interesting. He ignores the whole embarrassing scene. He stoops down. Now remember, He was interrupted from His teaching. Well, He just looks down at the ground and starts kind of doodling, drawing. It would be interesting to know. Wonder what He wrote. Burton Kaufman says regarding the situation, he said, you know, there were only two times, if you count this one and then back in with the law of Moses, the Ten Commandments, where God wrote with His finger. Jesus here and God doing it back there in Exodus. And He said, you know, both times, whatever was written just got wiped out, kind of, got trampled underfoot. Whatever Jesus was drawing down there on the ground, nobody took a picture of it. Nobody copied it. Oh, what did he say? You know, and the same thing, spiritually speaking, certainly with the Ten Commandments. Moses is up there, God's writing the Ten Commandments on that, don't do this and don't do this and do this. And the people are down at the bottom of the mountain breaking about seven of them while he's writing them out. They're down there disobeying almost all of them, doing all sorts of wicked things down there. And then, of course, Moses gets down there and busts the tablets, and they have to go back through the whole thing again. But this idea that Jesus is writing something down there and then he just kind of ignores them. Well, they continue bugging him about it. He lifts himself up and he says, tell you what we're going to do. Whichever one of you doesn't have any sin, you throw the rock first. Now, according to the law of Moses, when someone was supposed to be stoned, the witness, the one who witnessed the event, was the one that threw the first stone. Well, Jesus said, okay, you know, the one of you, see, these guys are all claiming, hey, you know, we caught her in the act. Now, they didn't actually find one person say, well, this person caught her, and then we're bringing her to. No, they just said, well, she was caught in the act. Well, who caught her? Where's your witness? See, they didn't have any real evidence. They didn't have a real witness to bring forward, to bring out and say, hey, here's the one that saw the event. This is the one. And you know, cross-examine the witness and all those kind of things like we would do in a court of law. And they did those kind of things in a court of law too. They did it maybe a little differently than we do today, but they believed in the idea of justice and these kinds of things. But here it is, then they're saying to him, you know, what are we going to do about this? And he says, okay, you got a witness here? Who is it? Well, no witnesses. Well, whoever's without sin, you throw the first stone. Throw the first one. And we'll take it from there then. Everybody else can step in line. And then he just went back down to writing on the ground. Well, they heard it. And as the silence lingered, I don't know if your daddy was there, and I don't know, some of you, you know, maybe your daddy didn't ever do things like my daddy did. My daddy would sit me down and he'd just look at me when I was in trouble for something. And sometimes when he didn't know exactly what I'd done, and maybe knew a little bit, he knew enough to know I'd done something. And he'd just sit there and he'd just look at me. And he wouldn't say a word. And after a while, the silence just get to be too much. And you just got to say something. And so you start confessing all sorts of things. You know, you just can't stand to be... The silence is too much. Well, these guys are standing there. And of course, all the crowd that Jesus is teaching, they're just listening to see what's going to happen. Jesus has said all he's going to say. He goes, he's not even paying any attention to them anymore. He's just waiting for them to decide what they're going to do. Of course, he already knows what they're going to decide, but he's letting them do it. That was 10 seconds. 10 seconds of silence. 10 seconds doesn't seem like very long unless it's quiet. Especially in the middle of a sermon, when it gets quiet in the middle of a sermon. 10 seconds, I don't know how long he was quiet, and how. But eventually they started, you know, their conscience started eating at them, started saying, you know, I can't throw a rock at her. And I can just imagine some of them looking around at the other seat, is he going to do it? Well, and they all knew, just like we all know, none of us are without sin. But, you know, some of them still want, they wanted to, we brought her down here to stone her, we want to stone her. If somebody will just pick up a rock, we'll just pretend that they don't have any sin, and we'll just go on and throw one then. Because only the first one. He didn't say everybody that throws a rock at her has to be without sin, just the first one. So if one of them had enough bluster to pick up a rock, the rest of them would have done it. But from the oldest, wisest, maybe you could say most sinful, because they'd had a lifetime to commit more sins than the other ones had, they all began to file out of there. And they left. And they just left the woman there with Jesus and this and his class. Sitting there wondering, okay, now what? Well, after a little while and they'd all left, Jesus looked up. And he saw only the woman there. So he said, well, woman, where's your accusers? Who's condemned you? Has anyone condemned you? And she says, none of them, Lord, no man. And so he said, and this is the part that kind of gets people. They don't like this part. Jesus said, neither do I condemn you. Now, we know Jesus, as the Son of God, knows every sin that every one of us and everyone else ever in all creation has ever committed. But, as a man on that day, he had not witnessed her commit that sin. There was no witness anymore to say she'd committed that sin. So there was no real grounds for him to condemn her anymore. Now, how often do we condemn somebody for something, even if just in our own mind, when there's no real grounds for it? How often in our society is someone condemned and found guilty in the court of public opinion before they've ever even gone to trial? But they're found, you know, people just know, well, I just know they did it. They hadn't heard the evidence. They haven't heard the witnesses and the testimony, but they just know that person's guilty. We've got to beware of that. See, Jesus still says, he said, you know what, I won't condemn you either. But then he adds to that at the end, go and don't sin anymore. Go sin no more. Don't continue in sin. This woman, like a lot of the people that Jesus encountered throughout his ministry, we don't know anything about what happened to her. We don't know who she was. We don't know if she listened to him and went, well, I imagine she didn't go and sin no more, but specifically about her adultery. We don't know if she quit or if she went right back to it and thought, oh, well, I got off that time. Nothing can happen to me now. I'm all right. And went on about it. We don't know. There's so many cases with that with Jesus. The people he heals, the people he raises from the dead, the people he teaches about various different things. So few of them do we ever have any kind of follow-up on. And we have a little follow-up with maybe with Nicodemus. But even Nicodemus, you don't read about... Was he there on the day of Pentecost? I don't know. About Joseph of Arimathea, was he there on the day of Pentecost? Did he obey the gospel and become a Christian that day? Was this woman there? Did this woman become a Christian? We don't know. Boy, it'd be nice to know, wouldn't it? That'd be one of the interesting things about getting to heaven and getting to see the follow-up stories of some of these people in the Bible, that God doesn't tell us all of their story because we don't need to know all of their story to know what we ought to do. But it sure does get our curiosity up sometimes, doesn't it? Wondering what happened to those folks. And this is one. I wonder, was it a blessing for her to be caught and brought to Jesus? Have you ever had a time like that in your life? Maybe when you were younger, maybe when you weren't so young, maybe when you were older, where you were starting to get yourself involved in some sinful activity and you got caught, and because you got caught, it turned your life around. You said, you know what? I'm going to quit doing that. I'm going to do right. You ever had that happen to you? Some have. Some haven't. Some just realized on their own, well, I need to turn my life around. I need to start doing what's right. But some never got caught and never thought, well, I'm going to quit. And they just continued on with it. Others get caught and they say, well, I'm caught now anyway. I've been condemned. I'm just going to go on twice as bad as I was before. Lots of different people, lots of different reactions, and we don't know which reaction this woman had. But it's certainly one good possibility that we can think of is, hey, if ever your sin does find you out, as Joshua told Achan, be sure your sin will find you out. But if your sin ever finds you out, take that opportunity to make a turn for the right and to do better. But even if your sin hasn't found you out, you know, we've got this woman right here. We talk about, where was the man? See, the man, apparently, he didn't have this moment before Jesus where Jesus says, go and sin no more. He didn't have that opportunity. Did he ever repent of his actions and turn back to God and do what was right? We don't know that part of the story either. But you see, with this woman or with that man, either one, or even with these Pharisees, what's important is not exactly what happened with them, but what about us? How are we going to act in our lives? How are we going to behave? Are we going to continue in sin until we get caught? Are we going to continue in sin regardless of whether we get caught or not? Or are we going to look into our lives and see where there is sin and get it out of there and turn back to God? That's certainly what we need to do. There may be someone here tonight that's living in sin. Maybe a secret sin. Could be a sin of the heart, could be a sin of the thoughts, could be a sin of hypocrisy or of who knows what that no one else here even knows about. But you could be living with that burden of guilt on your soul. Jesus is willing to say to you, neither do I condemn you. Go and sin no more if you'll come to Him. If you'll confess that sin, if you'll repent of that sin. Of course, repentance means not living in that sin any longer. Not going back to the same pattern of behavior. But there may be someone here tonight that needs to respond. Maybe you're not even a Christian. Maybe you need to come to Jesus to have all of the... You know, it's one thing for a Christian to have a sin that they haven't repented of and that's kind of weighing heavy on their soul. That's one thing. But you know, if you haven't become a Christian, that means you realize every sin you've ever committed from the age that you became accountable to God until this day, every one of those is weighing on your soul. Every one of them. Now, I don't know anybody who's only sinned one or two times in 30 or 40 or 50 years or however long of their life from adulthood on, you know, and from the age of accountability on up into adulthood. Oh, how many sins are there? If you're not a Christian, become one tonight. Wash those sins away. Take the weight of that guilt of those sins off of your heart and soul and mind. If you are a Christian and you need to repent, now's the time. We're not promised another day. If you need to respond to God's invitation, please do so as we stand and